know how much time you spend each day practicing the piano, but if I could show you a way to learn your pieces faster and shorten the amount of time you spend practicing each day, would you be interested? Just think, what would you do with the extra time that you save by practicing effectively? Play basketball? Go to a friend's house? Read a book? Play the piano for fun? I know. I'll bet you'd wash the dishes for your mother. Well, I'm sure you would have no problem finding fun things to do. So if you want to know how to learn faster and reduce your practice time, you are listening to the right tape. But let me give you a warning. The method of practicing that will be introduced to you on this tape only works if you do. It only works for the person who actively and sincerely wants to play at the $5 job level, a level of excellence. If you're interested in effective practice, if you want to achieve excellence in your life, which I am sure you do, then this is a tape for you.
Do you know what the single most effective teaching and learning tool is? Now, I'm not making this up. I've read it in several books and heard it from many good teachers. The single most effective teaching tool is repetition. Repetition means to repeat the same thing over and over and over and over again. Now, repetition can be a great teaching and learning tool. It can also be a very ineffective teaching and learning tool. Repetition can lead to boredom and disinterest. Have you ever been bored or disinterested as you've practiced the piano? I think most of us have. So repetition, then, can be used for great results or poor results. It's like a knife. You can use a knife to cut a piece of bread or cut your finger. When we cut the bread, it's helpful. When we cut our finger, it's hurtful. On this tape, we're going to discuss the ways to use repetition in helpful ways, ways that will increase your learning time while decreasing your practice time. We are also going to discuss how to make the time you spend practicing a microcosm of life. At this point, you may be saying, "What's a microcosm?" Well, micro means small. Just like a microscope, you're able to see small things with that microscope. So micro means small. Cosm, or cosmos, means the universe. Literally, it means a small universe, microcosm, or a model of something much larger. For example, the student government at your local school may be a microcosm of the United States government. The fight you had with your brother or sister may be a microcosm of a war. The way you practice and approach your practicing may be a microcosm of how you approach life. If you practice successfully, you can transfer the things you learn at the piano each day to your life. So in reality, you can practice life as you practice your instrument. Your life occurs inside your brain. Now, there may be some events that occur outside your body, but you perceive them in your brain. Your life takes place inside your brain. In the next 20 minutes, you will see how you can make your successful practicing turn into a successful life. Can you feel the shoe on your foot or the shirt on your back? No doubt you can, now that I've made you aware of them. But were you aware of your shirt or shoe before I pointed them out? Probably not. This is called the law of continuous stimulus. Wow, what a word. It's almost as good as a microcosm, but it is really quite easy to understand. Continuous means constant, always happening. Stimulus means to activate or make active. So if your coach were to stimulate you on the basketball floor, then he would make you active with that pep talk in the locker room. For example, if I touched your toe, the nerves in your toe would be activated to send a message to your brain and say, "Hey, some strange guy is touching your toe." So continuous stimulus means literally always being activated. This is the way it works. When the brain receives a continuous stimulus, such as the feeling of a shoe on your foot, it soon says, okay, okay, I know you're there. Now I will think of other things. And it does. And unless things change, like a rock slips in your shoe, your brain will no longer keep the shoe feeling in the center stage of your mind. Now actually, this is a very helpful mechanism, this continuous stimulus law of how the brain, you know, it acknowledges a stimulus, something coming into the consciousness, and then takes it away so it's no longer on the center stage, or else we'd have so many things demanding our attention. The shoe on our foot, the shirt on our back, you know, the light in the room, you know, everyone talking to us, that the brain is selective and it only selects certain things to pay attention to. And so it's a very helpful thing that the brain does with this continuous stimulus. Anything that continually stimulates your senses, after a while, the body or the brain will begin to ignore it. Now, what does the shoe on your foot and the law of continuous stimulus have to do with your practicing habits? It has a lot to do with it. Have you ever played a piece over a few times? It isn't perfect, so you play it over again. Then you come back to it the next day and play it again and again and again. And then you come back to it the next day and play it a few more times. Have you ever noticed your mind wandering as you practice this way? Well, nearly everyone has. It's because of that law of continuous stimulus. You work with it so often, and pretty soon the brain says, okay, okay, Jake, you can play this boring piece again if you want to, but I'm going on a break. And it does. Your brain thinks of something else, and it's very difficult to keep it there. Play the repetition game, but play it smart. Make it work for you. Learn how to use the law of continuous stimulus to your advantage. Figuratively, throw a rock in your shoe when you practice, or a rock in your brain. When you repeat a passage or song that you are practicing, you must do something different after a while, or you will be a victim of continuous stimulus. Let me say that again. When you repeat a passage or a song that you're practicing, you must do something different, or you'll be a victim of continuous stimulus. Now, I'm going to suggest a way to practice that will use repetition and yet beat the continuous stimulus law. Listen carefully. First, divide your piece into sections. Take a pencil and number the sections. Now, a section can be anywhere from 2 to 20 measures long. The purpose for dividing your pieces into sections is this. It's difficult to remember where your mistakes are if you practice your pieces straight through without stopping. By the time you get to the end of the piece, you can't remember how you played the beginning, generally. And it certainly doesn't make sense to practice the entire piece if you're only having trouble with measures 24 and 13. So, divide your piece into sections. Take a pencil and number each section 1, then go to the second one and number it 2, and then 3, 4, 5, on and on until you've numbered all the sections in your piece. Once you've divided your piece into bite-sized sections, play through each section one time. If you played it perfectly, bravo! Reward yourself by going on to section 2. Don't reward yourself by making yourself play it again. Go on to the second section. If you did not play it perfectly, then play the section 4 more times. Work hard to play each repetition as well as you can, making each repetition better than the previous one. Sometimes it's helpful to play each repetition more slowly until you can play it perfectly. After playing section 1 4 times, move on to section 2. Play through section 2 as well as you can. If you play it perfectly, reward yourself. Go on to section 3. If not, play it through 4 more times. After you've gone through each section 1 by 4, then play through the entire piece 1 time. If it is perfect, what do? Reward yourself and go on to the next piece. If not, play it through how many more times? That's right, 4 more times. That's why it's called won by four practicing. You only play it once if you play it perfectly, and then four more times if you didn't. Do you see how this method of practicing got its name? I cannot stress enough how important slow, perfect practice is. A lot of times a student will get into a rut of playing the same mistake over and over and over again. They keep practicing those mistakes until they have those mistakes down so well. Then they have a difficult time playing it any other way. As the great football coach Vince Lombardi used to say, it's not practice that makes perfect, but perfect practice that makes perfect. Slow, perfect practice is the road to fast, perfect pieces. Slow, perfect practice. Slow, perfect practice. Slow, perfect practice. Repetition. 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 I used to have an organ teacher who studied in Europe with one of the great organists of this century. This organ teacher told me that when he studied with this man, the man said, if you never make a mistake in practice, your chances are that you'll never make a mistake in performance. And so he had my organ teacher practice his pieces always extremely slow the very first time he played it. Very, very slow, so that he would never make a mistake. Now, I think there has to be balance between enjoying your practice and how slow you go. But slow, perfect practice is the road to fast, perfect pieces. And I think you'll find greater success if you practice slowly at first, particularly one by four. As you have those four repetitions, if you didn't play it perfectly the first time, what's your key to not having to play it through four more times tomorrow? Your key to being able to play it perfectly first time tomorrow is making sure that you practice it well enough today so that you don't have to practice it four more times tomorrow. And then when you hit the piece tomorrow, you play each section perfectly first time. And then immediately, your practice time is reduced by four times. There is another element of practicing one by four that we need to discuss. Can you see how practicing this way can reduce the amount of time you have to practice? If you play it through perfectly the first time, you don't have to play it four more times. Toward the end of the week, when you have all your pieces down perfectly, it only takes as much time to practice as it does to play through all your pieces one time, as we said before. At the beginning of the week, after your lesson, you may find that you are spending quite a bit of time practicing one by four. But after a couple of days of one by four practicing, your practice time will begin to decrease. By the end of the week, you may be practicing 5 or 10 minutes a day, or however long it takes you to get through your pieces one time perfectly. It doesn't make sense to keep practicing something that is perfect. That only leads to a loss of concentration. Then the law of continuous stimulus comes in, and then, because of the lack of concentration, more mistakes begin to occur. Remember the law of continuous stimulus. Work with it. A mother asked me to teach her 8-year-old boy, who had previously been studying piano with another teacher. I agreed, and even though the boy had faithfully been practicing 45 minutes a day, he was almost never ready for his lesson by the end of the week. Consequently, he would have to take many of his pieces over again. He did well in school, but his progress on piano was very slow. I sat him down and taught him how to practice the 1x4 way. When he came back the next week, I checked his practice record, and he had gone from practicing 45 minutes the first day to 5 minutes the third day of practice, and his pieces were perfect. He continued to do this week after week, working his practice time down from 45 minutes the first day to 5 minutes by the third day of practice, and this is not unusual. Practicing 1x4 keeps your mind involved. It keeps the law of continuous stimulus from crippling your practice time. practicing 1x4 has you going for results rather than just putting in time. It has you, like Vince Lombardi says, practicing perfectly rather than just practicing. Occasionally, I will have a parent call me and say, "I'm concerned about my son. He practices hard at the beginning of the week and then hardly practices by the end. What should I do?" I tell the parent to relax. "Before your son started studying with me," I tell them, it took a year and a half to get through 40 pages of music. Now he's getting through 40 pages of music in 12 weeks and playing it beautifully. Does that concern you?" If your mom or dad understand and see that you are learning faster, progressing, and have your lesson prepared, they'll be happy that you're spending less time practicing. Your teacher will be happy, and you will be happy too. Everyone will be happy that you are focusing on results rather than just putting in time. Everyone will be happy that you are practicing music rather than just practicing the discipline of sitting at the piano for an hour or two each day. Everyone will be happy, that is, except for slack. We will learn about slack in just a moment. As you practice the 1x4 way, a marvelous little dialogue will occur between at least two voices inside you. We will call these voices slick and slack. Let's say you played a section perfectly. Perfectly, all except one little fingering error. You used a third finger instead of the indicated fourth finger. Or did you? Slick says, "You made a fingering error. Better repeat that section." Slack replies, "No, you didn't. You just think you did. You've been practicing so long, your mind's beginning to play tricks on you." Slick says, "No, you made a fingering error." Slack, "Who knows? It happened so long ago. How can you even remember what you did? Go on to another section." Slick, "You made a fingering error." Slack, "You are persistent, aren't you?" Slick, "You made a fingering error." Slack, "It doesn't really matter. What really matters is that you played all the notes correctly. What's a little finger? Go on to another section. It's getting dark. You need to go play basketball." Slick, "You made a fingering error." Most of us have heard some or all of that dialogue if we've tried to practice honestly. Sometimes it comes in words, sometimes it comes in feelings. The frequency in which it comes depends on how honest we are and how much and how well we listen to the voice called slick rather than slack. The important principle I want you to remember is that whichever voice you choose to listen to will get stronger. If you ignore slack, slick's voice will become stronger and easier to follow, and vice versa. As you practice 1x4, it will be so easy to listen to slack and try to ignore little tiny mistakes. Don't. Do not give in. The habits you develop now may be with you forever. It's a lot easier to develop a good habit than to try to change a bad one. Decide now that you are a $5 job man. Set you for your standard a standard of excellence. Just think, you, the excellent person. When people say your name, they think of excellence. The movie Star Wars often talked about a force or spirit that was in all things and through all things. Everywhere present, the youth Luke Skywalker went to a Jedi warrior to learn how to listen to that force or spirit. The force taught him kindness, love, patience, and many other things. And of course, there was a dark side of the force too that taught him the other things. And both forces were contending for him and his attention and his loyalty. This concept was not hard for many people to believe and accept, because many have experienced the same type of force or spirit in their lives. Many musicians have written about it. Bach, Rubinstein, Brahms, Schubert, and many other musicians, artists, scientists, and writers, and other people from all walks of life have talked and written of this spirit, including Albert Einstein. You can nurture that same spirit and become a sensitive, noble human being and musician as you are true to the voice and are completely, completely honest in practice. Earlier, I called this voice slick. Even among ancient peoples, like the Indians, they have stories about this voice that is within each of us. There is an ancient story told among the Indians of a father who had three sons. Apparently, one night, the father had a strange and wonderful dream. When the father awoke the next morning, he called his son to him and told him of the wonderful dream he had. The dream was very symbolic and difficult to understand. None of the brothers could make any sense out of it. The youngest brother sensed that the dream was very important. He believed his father's dream came to him from the Great Spirit and went to a mountain to commune with the Great Spirit for understanding as to the meaning of the dream. While on the mountain, the Great Spirit gave the youngest brother an understanding of the dream. He even showed the youngest brother the dream. However, the two older brothers went to their tents and argued about the meaning of the dream and tried to figure it out intellectually. When the younger brother came down off the mountain to the tent of his older brothers, they asked him if he knew what their father's dream meant. The younger brother said, "Have you asked the Great Spirit?" They replied, "No, the Great Spirit makes no such thing known to us." The younger brother chastised them and said, "Because you've ignored his voice, your ears have become calloused. Your hearts are as hard as stone. He's trying to talk to you. He wants you to know the meaning of the dream, but you won't listen." These brothers were ignoring slick and listening to slack. Mediocrity is caused by ignoring slick. Excellence is achieved by listening to him. You can achieve excellence in the piano and in your inner life. Listen to Slick, or the Great Spirit in the Indian story, or the Force as in Star Wars. Be honest in your practice and follow that voice, and you will achieve the spiritual sensitivity that Brahms, Bach, Albert Einstein, Albert Schweitzer, and many others achieved through their artistic and moral honesty. Now, the young brother accused his older brothers of having calloused ears. Do you know what a callus is? You get them on your hands when you work with them. Anytime there's a periodic rubbing against the skin will develop a toughness to protect itself. I remember the first time I played a harp. I was walking through the halls of a university's music building and noticed an open room with a harp in it. Now, I had always wanted to play a harp. They sound so beautiful. I looked up and down the hall. No one was around. So I quickly slipped into the room, shut the door, and sat behind that beautiful, big harp. I pulled the harp back onto my shoulder, and I reached the furthest side away from me of the harp with the larger strings, and I positioned my hands to play the biggest and best and most beautiful glissando ever heard. Then I pulled my hands quickly across the strings. Ow! I screamed in pain and jumped up from the harp. My fingers felt as if they were on fire. My fingers burned from the friction of the strings going across those metal strings so fast. Later, I asked a harpist how she could stand it. She showed me her fingers. On the ends of her fingers were very thick calluses. They looked like small pads on the tip of her fingers. They were so thick. Our ears can become thick and calloused like the two older Indian brothers, or like the harpist fingers, if we are not careful. They will become calloused to excellence if we listen to the voice of mediocrity, the voice of slack, if we ignore our mistakes instead of fixing them. Listen to Slick. Let me give you a couple more examples to illustrate what we're talking about. For a period of time as a small boy, the only job I had to do after I got home from school was to empty the garbage. It must have taken all of 45 seconds to empty the garbage, but I hated to empty the garbage. Now, my parents were of the philosophy that once a job was given, they would not bother you again about it until the time of judgment. The time of judgment was the agreed-upon time when the task was to be completed. Now, the time of judgment for the garbage was I had to have the trash emptied by the time my dad got home from work. Now, on one occasion, I remember coming home from school, and there was the garbage. Slick said, "Empty the garbage." There was that little reminder. I thought, "Well, I'll do it later." And the little voice came and said, "Better do it now." "No, I'll do it later." And then I went to go do something else. Then the little voice came again, "Better empty that garbage." And oh, was it ever persistent. And it insisted that I get the garbage done. Have you ever had a feeling? Sometimes it comes in a voice, sometimes a feeling like, "Oh, I should really do that." And that's the way it was with me. And I kept getting that feeling. But I kept putting it off and putting it off until finally the voice got softer and softer and softer. And it no longer came anymore. It got softer and softer until it was no longer heard. Finally, I just happened to look out the window as I was walking through the house, and there was my dad pulling into the driveway. Now, we lived in the middle of 10 acres, and so the driveway was very, very long. So that gave us enough time, if company was coming, to be able to clean the house and get it all set before anyone came to the front door. Sometimes we even had enough time to vacuum the floor quickly. On this occasion, when I saw my father, I would have had plenty of time to go out and empty that garbage. But I was so frightened of what was going to happen that I ran and hid in my closet. Then all of a sudden, I heard the door slam, followed by a heavy boom, 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 boom. My father walked with heavy steps that echoed throughout the house. We didn't have to see that my father was home. We could hear that my father was home. Then I heard the footsteps going toward the garbage can. Then I heard a, "Brad, get in here." I very meekly climbed out of the closet. Yes? Now, my father was of the opinion that physical force and punishment was a healthy thing that added great meaning to his words. My bottom was bruised, and his belt was well used, and it helped reinforce the lesson to listen to that voice now. Have you ever heard a little voice inside you say, "Practice the piano," or had a feeling that you should do it, and then ignored it only to have it fade away until, "Oops, it's bedtime. Too late. I'll have to do it tomorrow." Pretty soon you're doing 2 or 3 days practice in one day, all the while vowing to do better next week, only to have it reoccur again. The greatest spiritual sensitivity comes to those who obey the voice and obey it now without procrastinating. The greatest excellence comes to those who obey the voice and obey it now without procrastinating. Do your homework now. Empty the garbage now. Practice the piano now. Obey the voice now. In a moment, I'm going to have you stop the tape, but before you do, I'm going to suggest you do something. After you stop the tape, get your piano notebook and a pencil. Draw 5 boxes, or 1 box for each day you will practice this coming week. As you practice the 1x4 way this week, write down how much time it took you to practice your pieces the 1x4 way. See how much you can reduce your practice time during the week. Go for results, not for time. You may be practicing a lot at the beginning of the week, but by listening to Slick, work the time down to just a few minutes. So, stop the tape. draw as many boxes as you practice a week in your notebook. When you finish, turn the tape back on to listen to the rest. Stop the tape now. Beethoven would often play a piano concert for groups of friends and patrons in people's homes. While playing a very soft part of one of the piano pieces, not all the notes played. Beethoven didn't seem to notice, but the people began to whisper among themselves. Could Beethoven be going deaf? Couldn't he hear that some of the notes weren't being played? For a long time, Beethoven had tried to hide his growing deafness, but now people knew. How do you think experiences like this made him feel? When he would see people talking, he would often think that they were talking about him and making fun of him behind his back. He became very depressed and at one point decided he would end his life, commit suicide. But at the moment of deepest despair, he heard an inner voice that whispered, "I know what I'm doing. Maybe I took away your hearing so that you could hear other sounds more magnificent than any known to man." Sounds. Beautiful sounds began to come from deep within his soul. He dropped into his chair, picked up his pen, and began writing the beautiful music he heard within his soul. If Beethoven had killed himself as he had originally planned, there would have been no Für Elisa, no Ode to Joy, no Ninth or Fifth Symphony. But he listened to that inner voice. He listened to Slick, not Slack. Once again, mediocrity is caused by ignoring that inner voice and developing calloused ears. Excellence in your practice and everyday life is achieved by listening to that inner voice. You can achieve excellence in your instrument and in your life. Be honest in your practice. Practice 1x4, and you'll begin to develop that same sensitivity that Beethoven, Brahms, Einstein had, and so many other great artists and scientists and great human beings. And you will be among them. This tape is fully protected under the copyright laws of the United States of America. Any reproduction in whole or in part is illegal. For more information concerning tapes offered by Music Wonderful Music, please write Music Wonderful Music, 289 East, 500 South, Heber City, Utah, 84032.